I like dogs playing poker. Because dogs have never bet on things, and so it's incongruous.
Hello and welcome to episode 135 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Han.
Hi.
Hey, everybody.
We have a packed show for you today. We have a special treat. It's a double Hot Topic episode, and then we are going to do our full review of the new release this weekend, The Accountant. So first up, Hot Topic number one, it is the Star Wars Rogue One trailer. Then Hot Topic number two is going to be Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Angie, you want to kick us off?
So today we got our third and last trailer for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. I always want to call it Star Wars Rogue One, but they decided to go with Rogue One, A Star Wars Story because I don't know.
It makes all the difference.
Yes.
To make me fuck up every time I write the title.
Yes. So it's not necessarily the last footage that we're going to see between now and December when the movie opens, but it is the last full-length trailer that we're getting. So this one unveiled a lot of big stuff. Some of the most important things that we saw in this that for the first time was we saw our first shot of Mads Mikkelsen as Galen Erso, like, in action. I think we had seen stills of him, but not him, like, in any of the footage. We got our first real look at Darth Vader in the movie. That was pretty fucking big. Like, we knew he was going to be in the movie, and the last trailer showed, like, a really quick shot of him from behind, but this is the first time that you see him actually being in the movie and interacting with the other characters a little bit and stuff like that. And other than that, it just showed a lot of it had a lot of like little character beats. It showed a lot more of the kind of battles and stuff that we're gonna see. There was one really cool shot, it was an overhead shot where you see this, like, it's like a sandy area and you see this like giant rock formation, and
there, did you catch like it the first time you watched it?
I did not catch it the first time.
I didn't catch it either.
I don't know what we're talking about.
Okay, so basically you see like a rock formation that, like, it just kind of looks like a rocky area, and then when you look closer you realize it looks like a giant Jedi statue that has toppled over and been half buried in the sand.
It's not even a tiny detail that someone would have missed. You know, it's really weird because it's the first time I saw it, I looked at it and I'm like, oh, a rocky formation, and that was it. And then I watched it with a group of people in the office, and then someone's like, oh, did you see the Jedi and the rocks? And I'm like, what are you talking about? When they stopped on that frame, it's not just like a little blip in the corner, it is the full frame, and it is so glaringly obvious that I could not believe that I missed it the first time. But
I feel like there's just so much new stuff to take in, and you're like kind of drinking it all in, so you kind of miss stuff like that. Like, I've watched
this, and we're also watching it on our computers as opposed to on a film, like on a movie theater screen, which I think we tend to forget is how people tend to watch these. I forget until I actually go to the movies and I'm like, oh right, trailers are gigantic and really exciting in that form.
Chrissy was trying to give you an out, Perry.
I'm dying. Yeah, I don't deserve an out on that. I couldn't believe it when I missed it, but I would die to see this thing on a big screen at this point, because the cinematography in this thing is so freaking stunning. There's so many times where I just wanted to, like, pause and just grab a still of whatever image I could find. My favorite thing about this trailer, though, was Mads Mikkelsen, because I don't know if I just wasn't looking into plot details, and this is something I should have known, but I was kind of always under the impression that he was,
Angie's doing the Hillary Clinton shimmy right now.
I am.
I looked away from the screen for a second, and I wasn't sure if it was something I did or if you did, Christy. But anyway, I'm really excited for his character. For some reason, I was under the impression that, or I just like made this up in my mind, that we were only going to see him in a little bit of the movie, and it was going to be more so about just Jyn Erso and her and the group of rebels trying to steal the Death Star plans. I never realized how well woven throughout the entire narrative Galen Erso is going to be, because he very clearly has... You know, we knew he had a relationship with Krennic beforehand, but based on the scenes that we see in this trailer, we're going to see him when Jyn was a young girl, and we're going to see him when she's grown up and she's looking for him, and that's really interesting to me.
Question. So is this a remake of Man from U.N.C.L.E.? Because is that not exactly the plot?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it doesn't have a Henry Cavill or an Armie Hammer type.
We don't know what Diego Luna's doing yet.
We know that he looks great in this. I'm really excited for all of the characters. Like, I feel like, I mean, we don't know any of them really well yet. And that's actually one of the things that I find really exciting about Rogue One, is that we know basically how the story's going to end. We know that the Death Star plans get to the Rebels, because that is literally in the opening crawl of A New Hope. But we don't know how they get there. We don't know any of these characters very well. We don't know where any of them end up. We know, like, you know, Darth Vader is obviously going to survive, but everyone else, you know, the like all bets are off. So I find that really interesting and really exciting in a way that like I realized I hadn't seen in a franchise movie for a long time. Like the kind of feeling of just being like, ooh, who are these people? And what's going to happen to them? I don't know if they're going to survive. I don't know what's going to happen. And that's kind of thrilling.
I'm placing my bets right now. Not many of them are going to survive. Isn't that sad?
I love all of them so much, and I'm so worried.
I think a good chunk of them will, because then they can make another Rogue 2.
Well, given where this movie leaves off, and the next movie picks up. Yeah, but they could spin it off.
I mean, we're doing Young Han. They could definitely be like, Jin's Adventures in Tatooine, or whatever.
I think this is actually a good segue into our next hot topic, because I would like to talk about the fact that today Warner Brothers announced that Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which opens next month, is going to be the first movie out of five. We've known for a while, I think for a couple years now, that it was going to be a trilogy, but today they announced that they are going to add two more films on top of that. J.K. Rowling is claiming that, like, no, it's not at least five, it's just five movies. But, you know, who can fucking trust Warner Brothers at this point? Because they also told us The Hobbit was two movies, and that turned out to be three fucking movies. And this is something that, like, I guess I'm not surprised necessarily that they wanted to keep the franchise going, because obviously when you have a moneymaker like Harry Potter on your hands, you're going to wring every last cent out of it that you can. That's just the smart thing to do. But like when they announced that they were going to make five before we had even seen the first one, I just kind of just had this sinking feeling of like, you know, I started out being really excited to see where this franchise is going to go and being like, oh, like we don't, you know, I know the Harry Potter universe, but not these characters in this world. And now I'm like, and now I feel like I'm going to get 1/5 of a story, and it's going to be just something that I have to like drag my ass to the theater for every 2 years for the next 5 years. It feels like the equivalent of like a guy like hitting on you by being like, how do you like your eggs in the morning? You're just like, oh, that seems a little fucking presumptuous.
Oh my God, that's an amazing analogy. I'm actually curious what you think their reasoning for telling people at the fan event is. Because the fan event where this was announced, they only showed 10 minutes of the footage. So it's not like... it's not like already critics are super on board with this movie. Already audiences love this movie. And hooray, we're getting four more. Like, they're like, yeah, this movie, by the way, this movie is not coming out for another month or so. Like, you're getting four more. And I thought that was a weird move. Does anybody have any thoughts on why that might have happened? Like, why they're announcing it, not why they're doing it. Like, obviously they're doing it because Harry Potter prints money.
I don't know the chain of events or how things were said or dropped, but maybe it was said during the event and it was just said out loud and then the press release came out after.
No. I was listening to the event and like, you know, it was a surprise that J.K. Rowling came out. At least I was kind of half watching, but it seemed like she kind of came out with like the purpose of announcing this to people. So it's not like something that they accidentally let slip. Like they were very excited to be like, you know, breaking news, we're going to have two more movies. And I agree with Christy. Like, it's really weird. Like, to me, this is a move that would have made sense if like the first movie came out and everyone loved it. And like, everyone was like, oh my God, it's so sad that we only get two more. I wish we could have even more. And then like, that would have been the time to drop it and been like, hey, guess what? But like now it's just like,
I don't have that reaction. I think it's definitely a ballsy move, and they probably should have waited until the first one came out and was a proven moneymaker and beloved by all the Harry Potter fans before they announced five movies.
This reminds me of how they were like, you know, after Man of Steel came out, they're like, we're going to make Batman v Superman. I was like, okay. And they're like, also, we're going to make The Flash and Cyborg and Aquaman and Justice League and Justice League 2 and Wonder Woman. And you were just like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, maybe just like chill for a second and like...
I'm also going to give this franchise the benefit of the doubt, too, because this is a movie, Fantastic Beasts is a movie that's a spinoff of a textbook with J.K. Rowling writing all the scripts. I mean, if she could write all those Harry Potter books, I don't put it past
she
to be able to write.
She hasn't written a script before, right?
Nope.
Well, Fantastic Beasts is her very first script, and, you know, she's a pretty damn incredible storyteller, so I would
buy... Yeah, but there's... I mean, there's a distinction between writing a book and writing a screenplay. My wonder is that I'm wondering that maybe Fantastic Beasts is not getting the kind of traction they were hoping for Harry Potter, and so maybe they're trying to invest people by being like, five more movies, and basically saying like, you don't want to be left out of what's going to go on with five more movies. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it's like trying to up the ante for fans so they'll actually want to be invested.
It is something that like I've seen studios do a lot, where like when they want to express their confidence in something that's not doing that well, they'll like announce a sequel so that it sounds like to make it look like they're right. Confident. But it seems like a weird thing to do for this movie. Like, even if it's not tracking as well as they were hoping, there's no fucking way that this is a movie nobody's interested in. Like, it's a Harry Potter movie. Even if it's a quote unquote disappointment, it's gonna be like a Batman v Superman style disappointment where they're like, oh, it only made $800 million. How sad. Like, it's
right.
So it seems like just really, really strange. But I mean, that said, you know, maybe I'm jumping to conclusions about where it's going to go. Like, they, one of the things that they, one of the other kind of things in pieces of information that they dropped at the fan event is that the next movie, so this one takes place in New York in the 1920s, but the next movie, they said that Newt is going to go somewhere else. They also dropped some hints that there's going to be more like Dumbledore and Grindelwald stuff, which is kind of interesting because I don't know if you remember, but you know, so I guess those two were in a relationship that J.K. Rowling super
It's something that's totally evident in the book. And then afterwards, J.K. was like, P.S. Dumbledore's gay, which like, I guess good for her. But it also felt a little like easy.
Like,
she didn't proclaim it in the books where people could have had like a solid reaction. She proclaimed it on like Twitter.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, and she got kind of a lot of pushback for that, and a lot of people expressed their disappointment that Harry Potter hadn't taken the opportunity to explore a gay relationship or gay character. So I kind of, so I think a lot, I've seen a lot of people wondering, and I'm wondering myself if maybe this is their opportunity to do that. I mean, I don't know if that's where it's going. I don't even know that much about the plot of the new movie that's coming out, but I think it'd be an interesting direction to take the franchise.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's time for our review.
But, I mean, interesting enough for five more movies, I guess we'll fucking see.
I don't know. We'll find out, man.
Let's move into our big review of the episode. We're going to review the new movie, The Accountant, and I am introducing that one. Here is the IMDb synopsis. As a math savant uncooks the books for a new client, the Treasury Department closes in on his activities, and the body count starts to rise. Accurate. Ben Affleck plays the title character, the accountant, and he is a math genius that also happens to be well-trained in combat. He's good with a weapon, and he's essentially like a Jason Bourne kind of character.
He's autistic.
Also I thought Ben Affleck was pretty damn awesome in this role. I liked the character. I found that whole thing, him making faces.
We're both trying really hard to be, I'm trying hard to be good. Angie's hiding behind her microphone after not trying.
Well, I really like this character as a hero. I found his situation really interesting. I enjoyed the back and forth between him and Anna Kendrick. And the part where the movie lost me, I feel like it was half of a good movie. If they had kept the focus on the accountant and let us experience, you know, I don't want to call it a spy thriller, but, you know, I'm talking like, you know, a little Bond-ish, Jason Bourne-type character, that kind of story. If they let us experience that story and just focus on that story, this could have been a great movie, but instead, things get derailed when we meet J.K. Simmons' character, and the actress's name is escaping me, but another female lead, and they work in the Treasury Department, and the movie often veers off course and focuses on them as they're trying to hunt down Ben Affleck's The Accountant. Their stories just made no impression on me whatsoever. You could
also
have erased
very little impact on his story, like a shockingly little amount of impact.
Well, because they're almost like completely ineffectual. They can't touch him, and the movie never makes it feel like they could derail him whatsoever. And then I just also had a fun time basically watching Ben Affleck's character operate. I did have a tough time keeping up with the specifics of what he was doing for that client.
The accounting and montage didn't do it for you?
Well, that's part of the point of the movie is that he is a math genius. He is above and beyond our capabilities when it comes to mathematics and uncooking books for a client like this. But I found that to have been done to a frustrating degree. I was having a hard time figuring out why John Bernthal's character just magically happened to appear in the situation. He has meetings with all these other characters. It's just very difficult to connect the dots where Ben Affleck is unraveling this mystery that you're not a part of. He's so many steps ahead and there's no catching up.
Oh, that's interesting because I thought of it more like, because there's only like, there's seven characters, which is a lot. So we don't get a lot of time with them. But because there's only seven, when they start going to flashbacks, I was like, okay, so everything is relevant here, right? Because otherwise, why are we here? And it made the ending for me incredibly predictable, which I won't get into right now. But like, I just found this movie shockingly boring because they talk about like actual accounting way more than maybe I should have seen it coming. It is called The Accountant.
That does seem like it's on you, Christy.
But like literally, he's supposed to have this romance with Anna Kendrick, which I forget if we even mentioned it. His character is autistic. So like the performance that Affleck chose for this is the kind of autism where you're kind of outwardly very stoic and you don't really understand how people's emotions work. Like, you don't initially, you don't instantly empathize and understand facial cues. And so with that, he just seems like he's sleepwalking through this movie. And then he's supposed to be flirting with Anna Kendrick, I guess. But it's so awkward that at one point she goes to kiss him. And I was just like, please don't make this happen. Because I felt so uncomfortable. And it feels like she has to do all the heavy lifting herself. But then her having like a romantic love, like being the requisite love interest, feels totally unnecessary. It's just such a strange movie. It feels like if it were a TV series, maybe this would have made sense in a Game of Thrones type scenario. But as a movie, you're just like, wait, why are we here now? What's happening? Why are we flashing back? What's going on? And like, I didn't care about any of the characters enough to want to pay attention. And then at the end, I was like, there are scenes that I have no idea why they're happening in the end. Like, a character celebrates in the end. I was like, what did they even accomplish? What are we talking about right now?
Nothing. I think I liked it a little bit more. Little bit more than Christy did. I didn't like it that much more. But I do think that there were parts that worked, and that I was like, I kind of wish the movie had more of this and less of the other stuff. Like, for example, the Ben Affleck, Anna Kendrick stuff, like, it's not perfect, but I do think that, like, they have such a weird chemistry together because they're really, really different characters, and they almost feel like they're from two different movies, but they're both, like, you know, like, Affleck can be kind of likable, but she's really likable, and I think that because of that, it's kind of fun to watch them together. And I was like, I almost kind of wish that this had just been a story about these two being friends, or even a rom-com focused on these two characters, but instead, it does, like, the reason it feels so awkward when they start to push it into a romance is because it's very underdeveloped. But I thought they had a really fun chemistry, and I was like, I wouldn't mind watching that. The J.K. Simmons plot, though, like, at the end, I realized, like, oh, literally the only reason that we were watching this the whole time was for fucking exposition.
Mm-hmm.
That it does. Like, and not only that, but it's one of those movies, we kind of talked about this last week a little bit with Girl on the Train, right? But, like, it's one of those movies where, like, the mystery isn't a real mystery. It's that certain characters are withholding information from the audience for no reason. Like, you're watching plot lines from the perspective of characters who know stuff, but they're not telling you things for no plot reason. It's not like anyone's trying to figure something out. It just turns out in the end that, like, every question you had, this one character actually knew the answers the whole time, and we were watching this character the whole time, so why the fuck was it a mystery? I don't fucking know.
Yeah, I did enjoy the flashback scenes, though. Like, just as standalone scenes. I like what they did for Ben Affleck's character specifically, not for the big reveal or the mystery.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step on you, but I agree with you there, but I think that the story should have been told in chronological order, because the flashbacks feel wildly unmotivated, and they would have allowed for us to get to know his character as a child, where it would have been a lot more relatable, because, like, relating to, like, a child who doesn't feel like he fits in is a lot easier to do than to relate to, like, a, like, dude in a suit who's just being vaguely rude to people.
I actually really disagree with the idea of the whole thing playing out in order. I thought they cut into the flashbacks really, really well, where, you know, he's the kind of guy who is going to obsess over certain details, and there's so many things in his routine in the present that stems from what he went through as a kid. I thought they did a great job cutting back and forth.
Some of the routine made zero sense to me, by the way. There's, like, the flashing light and the weird music and him hitting himself with a stick. I have no idea what that was about. Like, none.
I thought that the flashbacks, I mean, it's very, like, simplistic, but I thought the flashbacks did show it. My bigger problem was that, like, the flashbacks kind of worked for the first half of the movie for me, but, like, the thing is, toward the end, you just get, there's one scene that's just basically a huge info dump. You get, like, two movies worth of information about stuff that you've been watching, and it's all just, like, a character explaining it, and, like, that part kind of pissed me off. Like, that felt really weird and lazy.
It's so long, too. It feels like it's, like, 15 minutes where they're explaining to you. You know what it feels like? It feels like they're explaining to you, like, previously on The Accountant, and they're explaining to you a movie that they didn't make. Yes. And it's just so weird because it's more interesting. The story that they tell in that 15 minutes is more interesting than the one they're telling now, but then they don't even show you the most interesting parts of it. They're like, and then this super sad thing happened, says right. J.K. Simmons. And then they cut back to the flashback. And I was like, you're a movie. Like, show, don't tell. What are we... As much as I love J.K. Simmons, and it made me be like, he should do audiobooks. I don't know if he does do audiobooks. We should research. But, like... It just, I was like, what am I listening to right now? It didn't feel like a movie at that point. It felt like J.K. Simmons sat down with me to tell me about a movie he saw one time.
We should wrap up soon, but I do want to touch upon one other thing. So, you know, what makes this movie really unusual, like, compared to your typical Jason Bourne knockoff is that, you know, you've got an autistic main character who's an accountant. But I don't think the movie kind of is... like does that well with that. Like for so specifically, I will admit that this is like I'm a little bit out of my element here. Like I don't have a lot of personal experience with people who are on the spectrum or anything like that. But it did seem really weird to me that this movie treats autism like it's an X-Men superpower as opposed mm-hmm. to like a real thing that people have and like live with and, you know, is just a normal part of life for them. So that part was really weird to me. It also seems to have some really just like kind of questionable ideas about how to deal with a child who has autism. I don't like I said, I'm going to admit, like, you know, child rearing and, you know, autism, two things I don't know that much about.
Most people would agree, though, you shouldn't let a sensei punch your autistic child in the face. Like, I think most people would be on board with that as a statement. That's the weird thing, though. Like, you and I talked about this, and we won't go into super spoilers. We're almost done with the review. But there's, like, a point where we were unclear on what the movie thinks about how his childhood went. Because it seems to be like, but now he's a hero. It's like, very superhero. I mean, when I wrote my review for CBR.com, I treated it like a superhero movie, because that's what it feels like. It feels like a really badly hewn origin story of a superhero who's like, he had this struggle when he was a child that he was autistic, but his dad was his Alfred and da-da-da and this and this, and now he cooks books and, like, fights crime or something.
But with superhero movies, you usually have an idea of like how these characters feel about their own history. With this movie, you don't get that. I kind of think maybe that's the problem with this movie, and I think a lot of the problems, the more that we talk about, the more I think a lot of the problems boil down to the fact that this movie doesn't have a strong sense of perspective. It doesn't seem to have a really good idea of how you're supposed to feel about anything that happens. It doesn't even seem to have a good idea of how its own characters, including the main character, feels about any of the stuff that's happening.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like there's just a weird sense of telling you stuff without ever caring that, like, we're not grounded in how the character feels. Like, I don't know how he felt about 90% of the things that were going on unless someone told me.
I don't think that's even just, like, his affect where he's kind of flat. I think that the script itself doesn't.
I think it's a failure. Yeah, I think it's a failure in both.
So,
yeah,
I feel like.
Yeah, I'll just throw in a little disagreement with that. I did think that I had a decent time reading the accountant, reading Ben Affleck's character, and trying to figure out what, you know, a type of character like this, who's different from any other character like this that I've seen before. I kind of enjoyed the challenge of, you know, seeing how he operates, seeing his routine, and trying to figure out how he felt about certain things. Another reason why I really appreciated the Anna Kendrick relationship, because I could see on his face what it was about her that made him change and be open to something like that in his life. But I will agree, the movie is not a mess. I think it's half of a good movie. And from a pure entertainment standpoint, I enjoyed watching Ben Affleck's character operate in this movie, and I would recommend it for that. J.K. Simmons, not so much.
Would you watch the sequel that they're clearly trying to set up here?
I would.
Oh, man, I would not. What would they call it? What would be a really good name for The Accountant 2?
Go on Twitter. Everyone has already made puns about this.
Oh, fine. I'm a hack. Thanks for joining us for Popcorn and Prosecco.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for our review of the Accountant. You guys know what to do. Please go on over to iTunes, where you can subscribe, comment, rate, all that good stuff. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. Please like us on Facebook, and then we also have our Twitter handle as well. It's Popcorn Prosecco. And then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I'm on Twitter at Christy Puchko, that's KRISTYPUCHKO, and I write all over the web. You can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
And I am on Twitter and Instagram at PNemroff. I write for Collider.com. I'm on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. And that's about it for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
I can't believe that we had a podcast where there was disagreement about our feelings about The Accountant, and nobody said the "there's no accounting for taste" line. What are we doing?
It's Rogue One.